But we're sitting here inside a hotel or a mall, or I don't even know what the hell it is, in Las Vegas, outside of Starbucks. Where, how much is this coffee costing, Kyle?
$30 or something, like $40.
Well, just for the two cups of coffee we got now, because we didn't get the snacks we usually get.
I honestly didn't look. I had to tip. I think it was like the default was like 20%. So,
well, you got to take care of people. I know that, but for God's sake, we've come here the last couple of days, and it's been like $50-$55 for two bagels and two cups of coffee, which is insane.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I have no problem with the tips. Tips, I think, are important. It's something, you know, everybody should really think about, and especially when they're getting services and so forth. But yeah, the upcharging on things that you might expect are one thing, just to be in a certain place. In fact, being anywhere really seems to have a cost here.
Oh my God, where do we begin? Well, here's the thing. We're at a hacker conference called DEF CON, and we're having a great time there. Love the people there. Love the organization and the event. It's, you know, that's a mecca for us. It's a bastion of sanity. But you step outside of that, and it's just Crazyville. We have a lot of examples to share of that. But right now we're in a hotel where you might hear the music blasting. I've never heard music sound quite this loud before in the cavernous hallways of a mall, but they really, really continuously play 24 hours a day this music, it doesn't do much for my mood, I'll tell you that. If you're not careful, you'll wind up wandering through a casino, which is almost impossible to get out of. You won't know what time it is. You won't know if it's daytime or nighttime. And, you know, if you're looking for something, it will not be easy to find. And to get from one place to another, you almost always have to walk through a casino. So, yeah. Even the elevators sound depressed here. Listen to the elevator going down, the announcement that it says on every floor.
Level 38. Going down.
I mean, that's like Marvin, was Marvin an elevator in Hitchhiker's Guide? You know what? I don't even remember. I think he was. But regardless, very depressing elevator.
Yeah, it seemed like it was very, very depressed. And at least, I don't know, every bit of it just seems to be moving you through different puzzles.
But, you know, it's weird because I think we're the odd ones out. Because I see people, we're looking downstairs, and they all seem so happy. there were these girls who were here like about 20 minutes ago, all dressed up in bikinis, posing in front of, what is that thing? It's a big smiley face.
It's like a miniature sphere, which is this other attraction that's like the size of a venue. But yeah, it's in the middle of this mall, I think referencing that attraction that recently opened and is basically visible all over town, amongst all the other lights and buildings that are on a really enormous scale.
Don't get me wrong, the sphere is cool. I mean, you know, to a degree. We were driving down the street, and all of a sudden we see planet Earth. It looked like full size in front of us, because it's constantly changing its graphics, and it's cool looking. I don't know about a sphere imitation inside a mall, and I honestly don't know what those girls were doing for 25 minutes posing in front of it constantly, having the time of their lives. Look, it's a damn mall, all right? It's a mall with overpriced stores, celebrity chefs, things like that. I don't know. Maybe it's just the New York in me, but it just seems plastic and artificial.
Well, that's one part of it, but it just seems like there's like a party that you just can't ever find, you know? Like that, I think that's what the music being everywhere sets the tone for. And just moving around takes a really long time because of these different places being so enormous, and yeah, just moving around, the sheer scale of it is just incredible. There's a lot of traffic. The heat is intense. The air quality, because of the cars and just the whole mass of it, just weighs on you. And yeah, it's just such a intense thing. I think just trying to bypass the casino in a walk we took to get back to the strip, it was like walking across like a movie set or like a lot. Like it was just, it was like half a mile or something. I don't know what it was. It's just to get around one building.
I felt like I was in biblical days, you know, walking across the desert and just, you know, hoping against hope that something would be waiting for me. We spent 25 minutes just walking past the MGM complex to get to a different complex. It's absurd. It's crazy. It's insane. And it draws people from all over the damn world. I don't get it. But we have to get out of here because we have to get to the convention center where the convention is. We can continue this conversation on the way over there. Let's pack up our stuff and head out of this damn mall. It's just one of so many. You know, you walk a few feet away and you're in another hotel complex with another mall. And, you know, the same thing going on pretty much. It's living hell. Wow. Okay, so we're walking out of this godforsaken hell. It's funny, because there's a hacker conference in town, they sent warnings to all the TV sets in this hotel saying that because of the hacker conference in town, they're going to search every hotel room, even the ones that say do not disturb. I don't know where the protection is there, but that is what they are doing for our safety. So it's, yeah, it's crazy. Okay, so we're going down the escalator now, and we're about to head outdoors where we'll get some respite from this plastic hell that's being bombarded around us. It's always the same type of music, too. It's never anything... I mean, is there a hotel or a casino that plays classical music, I wonder? Or jazz, you know? Anything different. Just this pop sound constantly. I'm out of breath just going down the... How am I out of breath going down an escalator? Okay, and this door is opening very slowly. I feel the heat, and I'm still not outside. Okay, second door opening now. And here I am outside in the shade. Holy Christ. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I don't often swear, but oh, hell, this is insane.
We're in a desert.
We're outside a hotel. We're only a few feet away. And do you hear that? The music followed us outside. It's still outside. I can't get away from this music. Oh, this is hell. This is awful.
Go down here.
Where?
And then we go left.
I can't see anymore.
Yeah, we have to get to a crosswalk.
The sun is so blinding. For some reason, I'm wearing a jacket. A dress jacket. I want to have a collar. You know, the standards. But we're heading to an intersection. I'm going down a ramp, but I'm still out of breath. This is not right. This is not normal. This is not healthy. Are you okay, Kyle?
Yeah, wait. Yeah, I'm okay. I put my sunglasses on because I know it's really bright out here.
You want to listen to the music a little bit?
Well, I still can't find that party. I was looking for that party.
We haven't even gotten down the steps yet, or the ramp, whatever this is.
I think we're on Las Vegas Boulevard, but we're leaving the front of this mall part, and then there's like an attached hotel that we're leaving, so we have to cross here.
God help us if we're trying to get somewhere far away, because it'll take you all day to get there. But where we're going is just across the street, but still, I don't know if we're going to make it. Because we're carrying things, and we've got our jackets on, and It must be 105 degrees.
Which door of the convention center do you want to walk through? Because we have to make that decision here, I guess.
I will walk through a plate glass window at this point. I don't care. I'll just go where the people are going. Okay, now we're crossing a street, which is also an ordeal here because cars don't necessarily stop. I've seen several cars just go blithely through red lights, and pedestrians aren't really treated with the respect they deserve. You know what? We can't do this, man. This is too much. One of us is going to pass out. Let's put our recording equipment away, and we'll pick up this conversation in a more comfortable place.
I don't want to keep walking. We just walk a little further.
Dude, okay, that was all downhill, okay? What we have to do next is level, and that goddamn music is still playing.
We have to find some food somewhere
is
soon.
I don't know if I can ever eat again. This is a punishment, okay? From now on, people who are sentenced to prison should be sentenced to Las Vegas and, let them figure things out here. And please let us go back home to our cool 85 degree weather.
Do you know this song? Should we use that app to figure it out?
Well, mercifully, I think it's a little low now. But yeah, there's always something playing in the background. I'm having trouble putting my thoughts together because I'm struggling for oxygen. The sun is beating down on us.
What else do you need to know? I mean, this is going to be a long conversation. I feel like I'm going to be recovering from just traveling away from here.
Man, is this our ambulance coming up, or?
There were a lot of ambulances. You know what I've
been thinking? Why do you think that is?
Remember when I said to you, this place is it's designed, to give you a heart attack. Like, the air and the all the vice and temptation,
I gotta say, I have not been tempted by anything except, the interstate to get out of here.
Yeah. We've found our way, but it took a really long time.
We do have a car, so that's the good news. And we also figured out a way to bypass all of the fees. They want to charge you $18 to park your car and then another $18 every time you use your car. So that if you leave to go somewhere and you go back to the parking lot, another $18. And being from New York, being from Seattle, we said no, that we'll find a different way. And we did. But we're not going to tell you what it is, otherwise it'll ruin it.
Yeah. You always have to assess what the parameters are. And if that's what they're asking and, you want to keep moving and think of another way, that's up to you. I'm going to fall over.
Yeah, I just put my hand on your shoulder and I had to take my hand off because you are so hot.
Yeah, the sun is really hot.
I don't know how you're surviving underneath that, but that is uncomfortable. So before our equipment melts, we're going to sign off for now, and hopefully next time we talk to you, we'll be in a much more comfortable place. And I don't mean death. I mean, away from all this. This is much better. The strip in Las Vegas is not conducive to having relaxing conversations because you're just trying to survive. So we are now on I-15 heading west, heading the hell away from Las Vegas, back towards Los Angeles. And we had a great time at the conference, at the Hacker Conference, but we are quite happy not to be in Las Vegas anymore. Would you say that's correct, Kyle?
Yeah, it really took a lot of time to get used to it and navigate our way around. And I would say that we did find good sustenance. Like, food in the city is pretty amazing. There's a lot of places. There's a lot of giant portions. You have to actually be a little careful, but it's such a resort place and there's such an emphasis on all of that you end up being able to find really good stuff pretty much everywhere. And I think you were in agreement with this, that that is an aspect of it that's pretty cool. Like, any time of the day, any time of night, you can go and be seated and have a meal. It feels like other cities that are 24/7, and
that's unique. That's probably a redeeming quality about the place. But other, but it took getting used to how to get around without the hassle of valet and all the like ways they capitalize on people willing to spend money. You know, they're on vacation, they don't care, and it's at every turn. So I think we did it the right way, but just the combination of the heat and the emissions, like the air quality is really bad. Lack of ability to get around. I think we agreed also there's like room on the strip that should be used for some kind of trolley up and down. Stuff like that that's integrated instead of private places with their monorails.
Well, you know, what you're saying is very true as far as things like parking. Because when we were meeting people for food in one place, you know, they sit on their site, plenty of free parking, but it's not really the case. Because as soon as you pull up, valet, yeah, $38 to park your car. $38 to park your car that you're already in, and then you have to tip them on top of that? No. You know, I'm not a cheapskate, but I don't like, you know, this kind of shenanigan. So we parked across the street at CVS. I'm sorry, but that's just the way we roll. And we also had to cross a 7-lane one-way street, which was also pretty weird. We had... as soon as we arrived in Vegas, the issue was, okay, how do we get our bags out of our car? You know, we're rolling into town, you know, in a fairly organized way. We've got bags in the trunk. We know where we're going. We're going to a hotel. All right, so how do we do that? How do we just get the bags out of the car into the hotel? Not so easy. Not as easy as you might think. You have to basically go up to the front entrance where, guess what? There's a valet who will take your car and charge you all kinds of money to do things that you can do easily on your own. So what we did was we basically put our four-way flashers on, unloaded the car ourselves, and then obviously I couldn't leave the car there, so Kyle went into the main lobby, and I basically went to what I thought was the parking garage for that hotel. It was very, very hard to figure it out because the sign said self-parking, and it pointed me down a road. And I passed the self-parking place going down that road. And then they stopped having signs for the self-parking place. So I had to do a U-turn in a place where that U-turns were not allowed to find the parking garage again that they didn't direct me to. I don't know why that was so difficult, but I was able to park there. And then I had to go back to where I dropped Kyle off. Now, you know, this is a couple of blocks away. It's about 100 degrees outside at night. I'm not in the best of moods. We've just arrived after a long drive from Los Angeles, about 4 hours. So I followed signs inside the parking garage, which is hot as hell, to the elevator. Because you can't just walk out the parking garage the way you came in because you'll get flattened by a car. There's no room for pedestrians. And that's kind of the theme of Las Vegas. No room for pedestrians. So I followed the sign for the elevator and kept going for a while. And then I see another sign for the elevator pointed the opposite direction. No kidding. And so I followed that until I saw another one pointing in a perpendicular direction. Eventually I found the elevator. And I get in the thing and, you know, there are several choices. I can go to casino. I can go to B1, I can go to B2. I don't know what any of that means. I just want to go back to where I was on the street so I could walk back the couple of blocks to where I dropped Kyle off. No, it's not going to be that simple. I didn't know what B1 and B2 meant. I was afraid of that. So casino sounded like something at least that would have humans in it. And I might be able to find my way out to the street. And that was a stupid decision because as soon as I got into the casino, I realized I have no idea where I am. There's no way to tell what hotel this is. There's no way to tell what time it is. There's no way to tell if it's daytime or nighttime. It's just one big damn casino as far as the eye could see. So I had to plod my way through that until I finally saw an exit. and got to the exit, opened the door. It looked exactly like the place I had left, except it wasn't, because it all looked the same. And I didn't know where I was. And I'd just gotten there, so I wasn't at all familiar with any landmarks. So walking down the street, I realized, nope, this isn't it. Walking the other way, that's not it either. And then I walked back into the place, into the hotel, asked the first person I saw, how do I get to the Conrad Hotel? Because that's the hotel we were staying in. Never heard of Conrad before. It was a new one on me. But he said, oh, just make the first right and keep going. So I made the first right. Guess what? Into a casino. I had to walk through the damn casino for about a mile, it felt like, until I got to the end of it. And there was no Conrad Hotel or any sign for that hotel at all. Just kind of like a dead end, some bathrooms maybe. Big hallways going in different directions without any signs indicating where they were going. All kinds of crappy music playing. So I turned around, started going back with the hope of finding that person to ask him what the hell he meant by making that right and finding the hotel that way. But then I saw a sign for what I think were hotel lobbies or just hotels in general. By this point, I was on the phone with Kyle saying, I can't find you. I'm completely lost. I don't know where I am, even though I can't be more than a block away. Then I saw another sign behind the sign that I had just seen, and that said Conrad Hotel. So at that point, I was able to walk down a hallway and eventually find Kyle in the lobby that I dropped him off at. I guess it must have been at this point about 40 minutes earlier. But boy, was that a hassle. Well, that was not a good entry into a city. We were both in foul moods at that time, and we were starting to realize that Vegas is hostile territory. So anyway, we didn't let that get us down too much. Got right back out there and, wandered around the city. The next day, I think we decided we were going to give the monorail a try because we had heard something about that, and the last time I was in Vegas, it didn't exist. Seems like a great idea. You know, you've got the Strip, which is basically all the hotels in the main part of Vegas. And driving up and down that is a real pain. There's a lot of traffic. You can't really walk up and down that. It's so hot, so ridiculous. So, a monorail, mass transit, imagine that. What a good idea for a city. I've never considered Vegas to be a real city. But this sounded like a good step in that direction. So we basically spent the early part of the next day trying to find the nearby monorail station, which was at the conference center. They have this massive conference center, which is where the conference was taking place. And we eventually found the monorail station, which really wasn't as close to the conference center as you might think. Course, the conference center being so massive, one stop isn't going to be close to everything. But this didn't seem to be close to any part of it. Had to walk basically about a half hour just to get to the stop from where we were staying. So anyway, once we got there, went up this very scary escalator that had a sheer drop going all the way down. And we basically... I don't understand why they do it this way, but the monorail stations, you have to go up, buy your ticket, then go down to the actual monorail track. So we did that, got on the monorail. Monorail has seven stops. That's it, seven stops. And we noticed that, it wasn't really stopping in convenient places. It stopped in certain places, and there was a list of all these hotels that it might that it was close to, but it wasn't really close to them.
Yeah, close is a relative term. I mean, the scale of everything is so enormous that to be close to one hotel or the other is like, just to get out of one complex and starting to get to the entrance of another can sometimes be like eight blocks or something, or six blocks. I mean, it's really massive, even though it's all condensed there. So when you look at this list, it's sort of arbitrary because it's like everything around that area, but no clarity as to what's closer or further away from where it actually stops. And even getting away from the stop might take you many blocks. And it gets even more complicated because some of the places do not allow you to cross and get over from one or the other side of the strip without going up escalators and on overpasses and stuff.
Yeah, it was insane. You know, we took it a couple of times. First of all, it's insanely priced. $6 for a single ride. Now, keep in mind, New York City is about half that. And it's New York City. You know, you get a lot more than seven stops. And you can stay on for a long time. You can transfer to a bus. But this, no, just one ride for $6. You get off now, and that's it. Day pass, much more reasonably priced. I think it's like 15. So three rides and it pays for itself, but still only seven stops. Yeah, I mean, you know, to put it in perspective, it's like your entire mass transit system is the AirTrain, you know, at JFK Airport. That's pretty much it. Pathetic, absolutely awful. Because when you go someplace, for instance, we took the monorail to the last stop. We wanted to go to the Four Seasons Hotel, which is where we were meeting some people. The stop said Four Seasons Hotel is one of the ones that was close by. It's the MGM stop. When you get off that thing and you're walking around like a human being, you will be looking for the to get away from the MGM for about half an hour. There are so many damn MGM buildings. It's insane. And then after that, you find yourself on Las Vegas Boulevard, the Strip, where you have to keep walking and walking and walking, passing all this garbage, passing all these tourists in the heat. And we basically spent, I think, about 90 minutes just walking until we found the Four Seasons, which is in the shadow of the Mandalay Bay, which is a hotel with a history I don't want to get into. But it was not convenient at all. It could have been great, you know, having a monorail that went straight down the strip and stopped right in front of hotels. That would have been nice. This doesn't do that. Having some kind of a trolley, yeah, that would work. And it would have cost a lot less than the infrastructure they built for the stupid monorail. Now, we did find that there was a bus called the Deuce Bus. I don't know why it's called that. It's a double-decker bus. It goes straight down the strip, and it also costs $6 for one ride, but day pass is only $8, so it's a pretty good deal. It does get super crowded, in the middle especially, and you might not even be able to fit onto the thing. The solution to that, obviously, is to have more of them. So I doubt they'll ever do that. But, yeah, if you're ever in Vegas, avoid the monorail. It's stupid. It doesn't make any... And, you know, it's impossible to figure out how to get on the goddamn thing. You know, we were earlier in the day trying to get back to the conference. We saw the monorail stop. You have to go through hotels. The hotels don't tell you where the next hotel is. They don't tell you where the monorail stop is. You have to figure all that out yourself. And if you're walking around on two legs, it's close to impossible to figure out how you're supposed to get from point A to point B. And once we finally found the monorail station, getting up to the monorail level was close to impossible. There were staircases that were closed off. We found what looked like the entrance to a massive hotel across the street, opened the door there. There was one angry concierge-type person who was basically just... His job was to keep everybody out. And we asked him, we're trying to get up to the monorail. How do we do that? And he said, well, there's one elevator across the street. You might have to wait 20 minutes for it, which is a bizarre thing to say. But that's the only way up. One elevator, one small elevator. Fortunately, it worked eventually and got us up there. But boy, what they make you go through. And if you're walking down a street, there is no place for pedestrians to go because they don't want people walking around. They want everybody in their overpriced mass transit system or taking Ubers or contributing to the traffic. It's it's a sad situation. It could have been so much easier, so much better, but it doesn't seem to be a priority.
Yeah, it is a free-for-all if you look at it by comparatively to the kind of civil engineering and planning that goes into urban planning that goes into other cities. If they just acknowledged, okay, that this is a resort town and that there is a need, like understanding the flow of it. But it seems like they're in denial with little interest in fixing it because everything is meant to guide you through these venues. So it turns into sort of a free-for-all. And like you said, really not much of it is meant for pedestrians, including the crosswalks. All of it's pretty much blacktopped over or has tire marks. Like, you can't see the zebra stripes. They haven't repainted anything. So there were a lot of intersections that felt incredibly dangerous, and sidewalks that go nowhere because they're mainly just a way for Uber drivers to get in and out of a parking garage. Often we would try to leave a building through the parking garage, but that routes you around the back of it when you'd otherwise have to go across the casino floor where people are smoking and the air isn't much better. So it's sort of 50-50 whether you end up doing more walking going around where there's a car pickup area or going through the casino and then ending up on the strip and trying to navigate all the people and attractions there. But it's really badly designed for the kind of flow that it has. And more stops, more public options would be the solution. And maybe diminishing some of the amount of private cars that are just clogging up and congesting what is supposed to be a place for mostly people.
I'd say, you know, both of us at some point in those couple of days, both of us were screaming to the heavens, screaming at the buildings because we were so frustrated at not being able to just get to a simple point or to find out how to cross the street or just something so simple that, you know, we'd expect back in New York that was close to impossible. Just screaming how much we hate this place. We just wanted to go away or start being logical or something. It was just awful setup.
Can I talk about the good things?
Yeah, you know, there are good things. There are definitely good things. I don't want to be a curmudgeon about this. I just want to point out that it's crazy sometimes the way cities are planned. And this city, you know, had a lot of potential, but boy, they made the wrong decision pretty much every time.
Yeah. I mean, there are ways to get off of this main strip area, and the places around it are really interesting. And I mentioned food earlier. There's a lot of good places that we found. We went to a 24-hour Korean barbecue place, I think, last night. We went to a what I think is a 24-hour diner that was really interesting. There's all kinds of people there, and a lot of films. I think Casino and other ones were filmed there as a location. We found our way to deli, a bagel place, and had some quote New York and other kinds of sandwiches, but it was very good and just the right kind of pick me up.
Can I just say that's where I got a pastrami sandwich as a final test to see if I'm over the alpha gal syndrome that I had from the tick bite that prevents me from having red meat, and I'm happy to say I'm over it because I didn't break out in hives or need an EpiPen.
That was so reassuring because I think we got a little bit more adventurous, or when you like ordered something that maybe had some meat in it, you realized, oh, okay, this isn't so bad, even if I didn't realize that was in the dish. We also had like authentic tacos, like again, off the strip, going to places that were sort of smaller. That's something we did today on the way out of town that was really, really good. The other place that we went to was sort of a dark, dim grill with a really excellent mixology going on. And the last place I think it was really, really interesting for me was an indoor cannabis lounge.
And I think that's a 24-hour, well, it's next to a 24-hour dispensary, is that correct?
Yeah, they were co-located and actually very, very close to the hotel. I had no more cannabis on me and was kind of reluctant. I didn't want to be taken in because you see all this other stuff around you that seems like a scam. And you're just like, oh, no, anywhere I go, they're just going to be like hustling me with some subpar stuff. That was not the case. It was not hard to find someplace. It was like literally across the street from the hotel. And they had a really incredible selection of West Coast flower, and I got a whole bunch of stuff there, and then put it in like a coat check, and went across after showing my ID for like a second or third time and getting checked in, was able to go into a lounge, which they don't have in New York, and in a lot of places they're not quite zoned for it yet, but Vegas seems to be innovating here. And so basically what you could do is go in there and consume cannabis in any a variety of forms. That is smoking a joint. They offer you all kinds of different devices to use, whether it's a bubbler or a bong or some kind of apparatus. All that kind of detail you can look into yourselves, but basically they give you a menu. And the other thing they did is they have infused beverages, which is something that I got. I got like a lemonade. And they also will do it into non-alcoholic beers. They were very clear about not combining alcohol with the cannabis products, but it was fascinating. They had a DJ in there, and there were people smoking. I wasn't that social. I don't normally have a big circle or really anybody. So it was kind of daunting, like, going in there. And I heard someone knock something over, and I was like, you know, that's a likely thing that could happen. And as soon as you start getting all kinds of glassware and things that you're loaning, and I don't know, it seemed a little daunting. But going up to the bar was really fun, and we ended up talking to the DJ, who was telling me about this type of file they use now with DJing. It's called stems. I just had this whole conversation. He was talking about being able to like isolate entire channels without using EQ, and I just learned a whole bunch, and I realized this is a really pleasant environment. I'm having a relaxing conversation, and pretty much everyone there seemed the staff was welcoming and like beleaguered, maybe, like locals. Like they were, they very much seemed empathetic to us seeking respite from the outside, and it really was. Really easy to get comfortable there, which I wouldn't do at like a dispensary or a cannabis place. I'd usually get, you know, just go in and out if I was at an ordinary place that I'd frequent. So the concept, it hasn't moved around, but it was interesting to try it out, and my drink was pretty good.
And that's like one block away from the Strip, you know, where all the hotels are, all the craziness. One block away, you can dive into a different world like this and talk to real people and have this kind of amazing experience. And what Kyle was describing before was downtown Las Vegas is completely different than the Strip, a lot more real. There are the sad parts about it too, because that's where all the bail bondsmen are and all the pawn shops and things like that, people who have lost everything in the other part of town, gambling and everything. Of course, there are also hotels there that have casinos as well, but it's just it's a lot more of a real place than what you see on the Strip in Vegas. But you know, it's something that always leaves me worried about those people back home who want to have casinos everywhere, and they basically dangle the temptation of more jobs and bringing income into the area. There's always a price to pay for something like that, and you do not want your town to be like Las Vegas or a place where all this gambling is constantly taking place, and there's precious little else. It's a very plastic feeling. So if you find yourself going to Vegas or in Vegas and realizing that you're depressed and not finding joy in the things other people seem to be finding joy in around that city, you're not alone. You're definitely not alone. There are plenty of people who find the place absolutely awful, and can't wait to get out of there. In all my life, I don't think I've ever been able to tolerate Vegas for longer than 3 days. That's just the way I am. So anyway, that was our Vegas sojourn. Again, the Hacker Conference was amazing. We met so many people, so many listeners to this show, to the other show, readers of the magazine, attendees of the conference, our conference in New York. And it's just amazing to see the hacker community be so much bigger than what we're used to. We're talking about 25, 30,000 people showing up to this thing. And basically just being really cool people throughout and just spreading knowledge, listening to each other, having fun, having real fun. And the fact that it was in the conference center this time meant that there were no casinos, no slot machines, none of that crap. Just a big, gigantic place for people to live in for 3 days, 3 or 4 days. So that was the fun part of all that. Now, we're, as I mentioned, we're driving west on I-15. I hope we're still driving west on I-15. And we don't know exactly where we're going. We're heading towards California, but we haven't made any plans. And we also haven't made any plans to return. So it's all kind of mysterious at this point. But I would like to go back to our train journey, which brought us to California in the first place. So we took two trains, one from Moynihan Station in New York City to Chicago, and then the next train a few hours later from Chicago to Los Angeles. The first train was one overnight, the second train was two, so it took us about 4 days to get there. We shipped four packages, four 50-pound packages, which is what we were allowed to ship for free in the baggage car of the train, which is awesome. The non-awesome part was that they lost one of the boxes. It wasn't essential for us in Vegas, but, you know, we want to get it back. And they have no idea where it is. At first, they told us that it hadn't arrived on the train that the other three had arrived, which was the train that we arrived on. I don't know what could have gone wrong. It's not hard to move boxes from one train to another if you have 6 hours to do it. But somehow that box didn't make it onto the train. They expected it the day after. They were going to ship it to us in Las Vegas, except it wasn't on that train either, or the train that came the day after that. So it's turning into a bit of a mystery. Maybe by the time this airs, they will have found it. They will ship it to wherever we are. It's interesting because, you know, even though Amtrak has lost the box for now, they've been so pleasant about it. They've been so supportive. They've been, you know, Amtrak people are just so awesome. If you ever have the opportunity to hang out with them on a long distance train, or you know, if you need their help in any way, they really move heaven and earth to make sure that you're happy and that the things are working as well as they possibly could. But on that train, boy, you know, this the train from Chicago to Los Angeles was a real eye-opener for me, because for the very, very first time, and I've traveled on many long-distance trains, but for the very first time, I actually interacted with the Mennonite community, and we see them on trains all the time, but we've never actually talked to them before. And for some reason, this time, from the moment we were getting on the train in Chicago, where one of the Mennonite travelers came up to me and asked, is this the train to Chicago? I'd never had even that interaction. So it was awesome to actually be able to finally say something and be helpful. I'd never even heard the language that they speak, you know, because I was never in close proximity to hear that. On this train, boy, did we make up for lost time, because we not only found ourselves helping out, giving directions when necessary, but also we found ourselves at one time in the viewing car, the car with the big windows where you can look out and people spend large amounts of time just watching the country go by. We were there when something unfortunate was happening on our train, where the train had to stop and an ambulance had to pull up to take a sick passenger off. But everybody in the car, mostly Mennonites, were all excited watching what was going on and talking amongst themselves in the Germanic tongue that they have. And we also had dinner with a Mennonite couple. That had never happened before either. On Amtrak, when you have your meals, you basically are sitting with a couple of strangers and you get to share your stories and just get to know each other. And I remember, you know, we were sitting there, this older couple sat across from us, and they were speaking amongst themselves in their language. And I was wondering when the Amtrak personnel asked what they would like for that particular meal, if they would be able to understand them. I didn't even know, could they speak English? And as soon as the woman was asked, just like that, she just spoke in a completely Midwestern accent as if, you know, she didn't speak any other language at all. And that was pretty awesome to see. And I realized at that point that every single one of those people were able to speak with us and were just as curious about our lives as we were about them. It was truly an awesome experience.
Yeah, and the more you learn about the kinds of things their culture has as distinctive attributes, I think you kind of appreciate the ability to interact and understand their sense of being in spaces with other people, specifically talking. I just struck up a conversation and asked. I didn't get a good answer. I wanted to know what kinds of things people always ask. I think there probably are a lot of common, silly questions that people ask out of curiosity, but I found it was moving much more towards a regular, just a nice conversation about where are you going, what are you doing, where you're headed, stuff like that. And they're very interested in what other people are doing and themselves, emphasizing personal connection and conversations part of that. And their attitudes about technology, I think, are pretty interesting and actually probably more in line with the kinds of things we think about and talk about. Although I did see an amazing amount of adaptation or adoption of certain technologies. I saw some members of the party using smartphones and having digital cameras, ways to capture images, which are themselves useful. And I mean, it is 2024, right? So their beliefs are that, you know, you have to adopt things and have agreements, and there is variation, but it's based on a community standard. And so that was unusual for me, because a lot of my thinking was that they would reject it. That's a sort of a misunderstanding, a common misperception. But seeing the ways they traveling places maintain a sort of strict orthodox dress and very modest appearance. They don't use zippers. Most everything is handmade, it looks like, or made by their communities.
But I even saw some variety in fashion. Not everybody was wearing the traditional straw hat and suspenders.
Yeah, what I realize is there's newer generations coming up, and they have these same questions, but the tools that are emerging at a really rapid pace are, just in the last 30 or 40 years have really probably pressed and pushed a lot of what the communities value. So then you realize you've got whole generations that come up understanding what internet is or what electronics are and the usefulness of them. And I think you even mentioned that in farming, a lot of the standard tools of other kinds of agricultural, maybe even larger scale commercial operations involve electronics and modern technologies that we're accustomed to. And those are sometimes employed in their work because they don't violate the sort of the moral and other ideals that the community puts in place, as far as not adopting things like televisions or things for entertainment and things that aren't applicable to the lifestyle that that finds religious meaning in work and in their vocation, which is farming. So even at dinner, the conversation with the wife of the couple we were talking to went into gardening, and I was asked, do you grow your own vegetables? And those kinds of conversations came up in our discussion and getting to know them. So all of those little interactions added up to like a really amazing time that answered a flood of questions we had had over and accumulated over the years of riding the rails.
At one point in the observation car, we were sitting in the middle, and I realized, you know, the Mennonites were to our right, a whole family and friends. And to our left were other people who weren't Mennonites, but, you know, they were enjoying the car as well. And I just realized, you know, we're sitting in the middle and we're kind of listening to everybody and talking amongst ourselves. But the people to our left, I was watching them, and immediately and constantly they were on their devices, whether it was a digital camera, smartphone, video game, whatever, they couldn't put it down. It was always in their hands. And I looked to the right amongst the Mennonite community. They were all talking amongst each other and just laughing and trading stories in their language. And it was just the most awesome thing to see that kind of connectivity. Nobody was left out. Everybody was, you know, sharing their experiences. I'm not even sure, you know, they knew each other. Because there are many Mennonite communities, and as Kyle said, there are differences, and they are, some of them accept technology in ways others don't. They're different than the Amish communities, to my understanding, who accept much less of this. I believe they were all Mennonites that we saw on the train, but there's so much that we don't know and probably are still getting wrong.
Yeah, and one of the other questions I asked was, what do you do for fun? Like, what are you doing? And that came up in the context also of where are you going? You know, what is the trip for? And they said the younger guy that I was talking to said he was on vacation and they were going horseback riding, which they probably do a lot in the context of work, but for fun, they would go and ride, and that was part of their trip for vacation. So I thought those were really interesting things you never get to ask. Like, what do you do? How do you pass time when you're not working? And how does that comport with not stoking temptation?
Also, a number were traveling to Mexico for healthcare. So that seems to be something that's fairly common in the Mennonite community. I think what happens is they pool resources and take care of each other, and healthcare costs are significantly cheaper there, so they get together occasionally and take these trips. That's one thing that they do. They do other things as well. Now, it's interesting because my understanding is they gravitate towards trains because they tend to take the lowest form of transportation without wasting resources, money, things like that. They can take planes. Again, this is my understanding. They can take planes if there is no other option. But if there is another option, the desire is to go to the lowest method, meaning lowest in cost, or something that just gives them the most access to other people and local places and things like that. Again, you know, I could be getting this completely wrong, but that's what I was able to get from this. And I realized, you know, the way we travel, Kyle and I, when we go various places, we adopt that same philosophy of, and you might have heard about it in Vegas, we don't like to waste unnecessarily. And we like to get the most out of anything that we do. And that includes connecting with people, and seeing as much of the local scenery as possible, and trying to learn from those fellow citizens, those of us that we encounter, rather than just tolerate somebody for a few minutes as you speed from one city to another, you know, in the sky.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a real highlight, though, getting to know an entire community, or at least a slice of it, in such a personable way.
Yeah, I look forward to more of that. But it's kind of bizarre, though, how we've seen these people so many times, never gotten to talk to them, and it's like something just changed with this one trip, where all of a sudden we were talking to everybody. And just sharing experiences and seeing how their kids act, and you know the differences in the way people carry themselves, and that is what America is all about, is all the differences and appreciating all those differences. So that's what we get out of traveling. That's why we enjoy doing the things that we do, and hopefully we'll get to do a lot more. Again, we don't know what we're doing next. Right now we're just heading west on I-15. It's dark. There's a cloud next to me that's flashing occasionally and throwing lightning bolts to the ground. So that's entertaining. And all kinds of fellow travelers passing and being passed on the highway. So what happens next? Who knows?
Good night.
Sunshine, go away today. I don't feel much like dancing. Some man's gone, he's tried to run my life. He don't know what he's asking. When he tells me I better get in line, I can't hear what he's saying. When I grow up, I'm gonna make it mine. These ain't dues I've been paying. How much does it cost? I'll buy it. The time is all we've lost. I'll try it. And he can't even run his own life. I'll be damned if you run mine. Sunshine, sunshine, go away today. I don't feel much like dancing. Some man's gone, he's tried to run my life. Working starts to make me wonder where the fruits of what I do are going. He says in love and war all is fair, but he's got cards he ain't showing. How much does it cost? I'll buy it. The time is all we've lost. I'll try it. And he can't even run his own life. I'll be damned if you run mine. Sunshine, sunshine, come on back another day. I promise you I'll be singing. This old world, she's gonna turn around. Brand new bells will be ringing.